Tonight our learning is sponsored by Bryna Malitsky in memory of her father, Reuven Eliyahu ben Aryeh Leib. Okay, Maamar Makomos are here. Yeah, let's just do a brief recap of what we discussed last time, and then we will jump back into our source sheets. We began a discussion of a very fundamental Reb Chaim Hilchos Yibam Machalitza, and I said at the outset, this is a great instance of where there is a narrow question in one area of halacha, which Reb Chaim uses to reveal broad yesodos, broad principles that animate all of halacha in its totality, in its entirety. So the narrow question was why the Rambam, in contrast to the Nemukah Yosef, seems to say that chalitza works without Eidim. The Rambam didn't say it fully works. He called it a chalitza psula, which is a flawed chalitza. But we noted that at least does work on some level, as opposed to the term eina chalitza, which means that the chalitza is no good at all. So whereas the Nemukah Yosef, whereas some Rishonim said, if you don't have witnesses on a chalitza, it's not a chalitza at all. The same way we would say that a kiddushin without any edim is not at all a kiddushin. We have the Nemukah Yosef saying that chalitza without edim is not a chalitza, and yet the Rambam maintains that the chalitza works even without edim. The question was, how does that work with the Gemara, and how do we explain the Rambam? Just to, again, briefly recap, the Gemara was discussing a case where somebody is confined in prison, they're in captivity, and they do a chalitza in captivity. The Gemara there says that chalitza works, but according to Rabbi Akiva, but the Gemara there qualifies and says it's specifically when witnesses are watching from outside the window. They have a glimpse into the prison, they're able to watch the whole procedure, and that's why it works. So if that's the case, it sounds like from the Gemara that you do need witnesses on a chalitza. How can the Rambam paskin that you don't need witnesses? That was the preface. That was the question that was being raised. So Rav Chaim went on to answer that really we were reading the Gemara wrong. He read the Gemara much more closely, and he said the Gemara said the witnesses are needed. Why? Not for the chalitza to work, but rather to report to Beis Din that the chalitza happened. The implication being the chalitza itself would work whether or not witnesses were there. What would be the problem? The problem would be that we don't know that the chalitza happened without Eidim. It's what we call an epistemic problem. It's just that we don't have access to that knowledge. It's not that the chalitza wouldn't work. And that's really what the Gemara is saying. And why is it that Kiddushin and Gerushin require witnesses, whereas chalitza does not? So this is where Rav Chaim introduces Yisod, and this is where we'll jump right back in to the source material. So we're going to go to the first underlined section on the bottom right of these source sheets. Again, the underline is, of course, mine. I made copies from my own sefer, my own Chiddush Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi al Rambam. So we're going to jump into the underlines that begin with the word v'hata'am. V'hata'am b'zen nireh. The reason for this is the following. We have two different forms, two different types, tzvedinim, if you will, of testimony when it comes to erva matters. When it comes to zinus, when it comes to certain things, when it comes to marital infidelity, a woman is prohibited to her husband not by virtue of the witnesses. It is the act itself that renders her prohibited to her husband. What's the role of witnesses? Just to prove that it happened. Without witnesses, we wouldn't know that it transpired. But is it the witnesses that create the prohibition to her husband? No, they're just there to prove a certain set of facts, to prove a fact pattern, or to tell us about what transpired. By contrast, he says, by contrast, when it comes to kiddushin, when it comes to a get, it's not that they're just there to prove that something happened. Without them, they are a critical part of the process, and without them, there is no kiddushin, there is no gerushin. Uchid kaimelon dehamakadesh v'hamagarish b'lo edim, lo heve kiddushin v'gerushin. As we generally say, we paskin lahalacha, that if you do it without witnesses, again, even if they both scream from the rooftops that we did a kiddushin, we followed the proper formula, we said harayat, the ring was worth a shava pruta, etc., 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 even if they have an edachad, or non-kosher witnesses who corroborate their narrative, that's insufficient. Witnesses need to be there. And then here was the key line for us. And the difference between them is the following. In the context of infidelity, where the halachic result, the prohibition to her husband, was a function, an automatic result of the act itself, the only role of the witnesses is to prove that it actually happened. Masha Einkin Begitin Vikidushin, Ta Baal Husha Osa Etzma Gerushin Vakidushin, Ba Isar Vahetar Alkin Srichin Edim Lakiume Milsa. By contrast, when it comes to Gerushin and Kidushin, it's not the act itself that is imbued with any intrinsic significance. The only thing that, or better yet, the only person or people that imbue the act with significance are the actors themselves. That was the distinction of Rav Chaim. Now, before we go further, I'll just again try to elucidate this principle as I was elucidating it last week. What Rav Chaim is setting up for us is two paradigms for halachic activities. The example that I gave last week was lifting an object and putting it down. And I said it's the same exact physical activity, but it operates one way in Hilchos Shabbos and another way in Hilchos Kinyanim, right? When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, if I pick up an object from Rosh HaYachid and I put it down in Rosh HaRabim, I have violated the Malacha of Hotzah. It doesn't matter what my intent was in doing so. It doesn't matter what significance I personally imbued with this activity. I have violated a Malacha Shabbos. Now, my intent will be significant in terms of what punishment I receive. If it was with intent, then I might be liable to capital punishment. If there were witnesses, if there was warning. And of course, if it was b'shogeg, if it was a mistake, if it was without intent to violate Shabbos, then I'd only be bringing a karban. So it will impact what punishment there is. But the violation of Shabbos is not a function of my intent. It's a function of the act itself. By contrast, when we go to the realm of acquisitions, the act of picking something up and putting it down has no intrinsic significance in and of itself. Zero. If I picked something up of yours because I wanted to inspect it, because I think it's an interesting collector's item, and I wanted to take a closer look in the light, and I put it down, there is no halachic ramification or result of that. That's what we're talking about. But when it comes to kinyanim, that's what we're talking about, Jerry. But if I have intent to acquire it, then all of a sudden that same physical activity is rendered halachically significant because it becomes a ma'isa kinyan. But what is it that makes it a ma'isa kinyan? It is my intent. So the halachic result is not a function of the physical activity. It's not a function of the physical results. It's a function of my das, my intent, my machshava, what meaning I imbue the act with is what creates the halachic result. And says Reb Chaim, that is the difference between different types of davar she'be'erva, particularly what he calls zenus versus kiddushin and gerushin. When it comes to zenus, it doesn't matter what the party's intent is. If it's purely an act of passion, or it's an act of rebellion against a terrible spouse, it doesn't make a difference what the backstory is. Pastorally, that might be important, but halachically, it's insignificant. Halachically, the act of infidelity is in and of itself a halachic problem, and it in and of itself creates a halachic result, namely, isur, prohibition, to the husband, to the couple. However, when it comes to kiddushin, if a man puts a ring on a woman's finger, it could be a gift. It could just be, I don't know, just a game or something. It could be anything. What makes it an act of kiddushin is the stipulated intent of the two parties. And Rav Chaim says that is the difference that will determine what form of eidos is necessary. If a halachic result comes from a physical activity itself, then almost by definition, the only role of the witnesses is going to be to prove that the activity happened. That's the only role they're going to play. Because again, the physical activity itself was sufficient to create the halachic result. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, all the Edom are going to do is tell Beis Din, this person violated Hilchos Shabbos. The Edom don't make it into a Hilchos Shabbos. They just report that it happened. However, there can be, if we deal with the second category of cases where there are intent, and the intent is what creates the halachic result, there could be cases where the Edim are necessary for the halachic result to go into effect in the first place. They're not just there to prove that the physical activity happened, but they are there to play an instrumental role in the creation of the halachic result, possibly, again, this is not overtly explicit in Rav Chaim, but possibly by concretizing the intent of the parties. As we discussed before, something that's done in private does not always have the same kind of somber or the same kind of seriousness of character and tone as something that is done in the presence of others, and it's quite possible that here the Edom are necessary to create a certain mentality, a certain mindset, okay? Good. So Rav Chaim has outlined for us, again, it's easy to miss, but it's breathtaking what he's doing. Rav Chaim is explaining a very narrow halacha in Chalitza. How many people knew the Rambam's psak on Chalitza without Edom before seeing this Rav Chaim? Very, very few. Most people who know this Rambam are knowing it because of the Rav Chaim, right? It's a very narrow, niche area of halacha. But through it, Rav Chaim just established for us, again, a very sweeping principle in how halacha operates as a whole. Sometimes physical activity creates a result. Sometimes the physical activity is almost a proxy for the meaning that the parties invest in that physical activity, and there will be ramifications for that. The first ramification that he has shown us so far is Eidus. What are the role of Eidim? In a Kiddushin, the Eidim are there as part of the process. In a Chalitza, or Znus, they're just there to prove that something happened. Now Rav Chaim is going to introduce other nafgamina, other differences between these two categories of halachic activity, and that's what we're going to explore tonight. And then, if we have time, I'll introduce several more that Rav Chaim doesn't mention, but that could be significant as well. Okay? Good. Now, before we go further, just a little bit of background on the next piece. We're going to pick up from after the underlines on the bottom, right? And we're now going to be talking about Katan and Ketan. Someone who is not of halachic age. Now, can someone who is not of halachic age marry?
Girl can.
So a bit of a tricky question. Let's deal with a 10-year-old boy, just for simplicity's sake. He cannot. He cannot. Now, why he cannot is also an interesting question. There are different expressions of why he cannot in the Rishonim. So we're not going to do that sugya right now. If we're learning Masech Kedushin, maybe we get into it. But he cannot. A young woman can if her father accepts the Kedushin on her behalf. Okay? What about Chalitza? What about Chalitza? Can a katan perform a chalitza?
If they can't get married, how can they do the chalitza? I mean, how can they get that?
Yeah, you realizing the assumptions, right, of the comment, right? David is saying, how can they do it if they can't get married, right? But as we've been seeing, perhaps there are significant differences between chalitza and gerushin v'kiddushin. Okay, let's take a look at what Rav Chaim has to say. So we're picking up again from right after the underline. According to this, we need to look at chalitza further. We're now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the bottom. Kivan dechazin on the pligi tanoi, yivamos taf kufheimer beis, we find that there's a machlokes tanoim on yivamos taf kufheimer beis, beketana shechalza, with a young woman, she's, again, let's say 10 years old, 11 years old, she did a chalitza, im chalitzasa chalitza imla. Does the chalitza work or does it not? But if you're dealing with somebody who is mentally incapacitated, cheresh and chareshes usually refers in Chazal to a deaf mute, somebody who cannot communicate and cannot hear. And certainly in Chazal's times, those people were usually incapable of any meaningful intellectual engagement because of the barriers. So let's say somebody who's mentally incapacitated. The Gemara Daf Kuf Dalet says, the Lekuli Alma. Havya chalitzas and chalitza. Everybody agrees that their chalitza would be good. Im lo mishum tama de la b'nei kriya ninhu. The only reason why they can't do chalitza is because chalitza requires reading. It requires literacy. And because, or it requires a declaration, right? Or b'nei kriya, that's more accurate. It requires a verbal declaration. And they're not capable of making that verbal declaration. That is why they are excluded from chalitza. Now, the reasoning here is going to be important. Why are they... Okay, so if that's the reason why they're excluded from chalitza, then they are not excluded because of what? Well, let's deal with cheresh and chareshes for a second. Not because of... What's the one word that we would use in halacha to describe what they are lacking? They are lacking...
Das.
The Gemara does not say they can't do it because they lack das. It says they're not b'nei kriya. The kasha, says Rav Chaim. This doesn't make much sense. A tapuklon, let's say they can't do it. Tevelav hachi, because even if they were able to make the verbal declaration, two lines up at the bottom. Cherishot v'katan, lav, b'nei, deya ninhu. They don't have das. V'chalitza tzricha das. And chalitza seems to require das. I'm going to emphasize seems to require das, because Rav Chaim's going to qualify this in a moment. K'mevor b'sugya di yivamos daf kovav, because we find just one daf later on yivamos daf kovav, the cholutzla uvekach atakonsa, top line of the second column, lo havya chalitza v'lo klum. Sorry, I think a little bit is cut off at the bottom, right? But he says, if he says to her, let's say there's a case where a woman goes, and she goes into Beis Din, and they tell her, oh, go through this process of chalitza, and you'll be married to the brother. In other words, she wants to do yibum, and they tell her the procedure of doing yibum is by doing chalitza. They pull a fast one on her. The Gemara says, that's not a chalitza. If her intent was to marry the brother through chalitza, she thought this was the marriage procedure, and it achieves the opposite result, and again, you pulled a fast one on her, that's not going to be considered a chalitza. So Rav Chaim says, you clearly see that you require das. She needs to know what she's doing. Require hikshuzos betosos dafkof dalet shum, and Tosos posed this question there. And what do let's take a look at Tosus' answer. Again, we're going to read the Rav Chaim and then I'll unpack everything. Petirtzu, and Tosus' answer, to Iri Bishab Basedin Omdim Al Gabehem, Umorim Lahem Laosos Chalitza Ketikna. When does it work? When Basedin are standing there with the Katan, with the Katana, with the Cheresh, with the Chareshas, with all these people who lack Ta'as, and Basedin are giving them step by step instructions on how exactly to do it. So who's supplying the Da'as here, in essence? Basedin is supplying the Da'as. Again, we'll read a little further, and then again, I'll try to unpack everything in a moment. Tachi Amrin and Gamkin, Begidin Daf Chafez. Chaim says, we also find this principle in Gidin Daf Chafez, fourth line. Techeir Eshot V'katan Shekasvu Get, that if Techeir Eshot V'katan wrote a Get, V'gadol Omeid Al Gaban, Techashar V'chashav Lashma. And a Gadol, an adult, is standing over them, observing or supervising the process of writing the get, they can provide the machshava l'shma. As we've seen, we know that a get needs to be written l'shma. How do we know that? Because according to Rabbah, that's the reason why you need to say b'fanei nechtav u'b'fanei nechtam. So as long as Basedin is standing over them, that provides the l'shma. Now again, let's just read two more lines. V'tzarech iyun, this doesn't make sense to me. To ma'ishna migerishin v'kidushin atzman, to lo mahani b'hu gadol omeid al gaban. Why should this be any different from a regular case of Gerushin v'Kiddushin, where a gadol standing by them does not make a difference? So, again, before we go any further, let's just unpack what Rav Chaim is saying until now. Rav Chaim said, look, I have a Tosfos. Tosfos says the following. A katan can't do chalitza. A cheresh can't do chalitza. Chareshes can't do chalitza. Okay? There are really two problems with them doing chalitza. One is that they don't have da'as. The other is that they can't make the verbal declaration. Tosfos will say, I have a method for overcoming problem number one. What's my method for overcoming problem number one? Basedin are going to stand there and they're going to give them instructions. That provides the da'as. The only problem is the fact that they can't make the verbal declaration. If Basedin is there, that's sufficient to provide da'as. Okay? That's Tosfos. When it comes to the important takeaway from all that is, when it comes to chalitza, the actors, the parties themselves, do not need to have da'as. They could be katanim. They could be mentally incapacitated in some way. Basedin is able to provide the da'as. You know where that is not true? You know where that is not true? By gerushin and kiddushin. When it comes to a kiddushin, you get a 10-year-old boy up there. You get the three gedolei ador, the basedin chashuv shebe'ir. You get the most elite basedin in all the land. And they stand right behind this young boy, and they teach him every single shir klali on Maseches Kiddushin that's ever been given. And they give him very clear instructions on what exactly he is supposed to do. Is it a good Kiddushin? Not a good Kiddushin. And Rav Chaim asks, why? Can a Basedin provide da'as? Or can it not provide da'as? If they can provide da'as, then why doesn't it work for a Kiddushin? If they cannot provide da'as, why does it work for a chalitza? That's the question Rav Chaim poses. Now, before we see Rav Chaim's answer, I ask you, what is the answer? What is Rav Chaim going to answer?
The answer is that, first of all, by a gadol standing, by a katan writing something, so one way to understand that is that they didn't transfer das to the kid, but the kid is the pen. That it's really, the das stays with the gadol.
So what would you say by a chalitza case? The gadol can't be the one to do the chalitza. He's not the brother of the deceased husband.
In other words, that you really can't transfer das to a katan.
Okay. So why does it work for chalitza?
I mean, if you could transfer das to a katan, then a boy would be able to get married.
Correct. So why does it work for chalitza? That's my question to you.
What kind of das are we talking about?
What do you mean?
I'm asking you.
But I'm asking you first. I mean, I could answer for you, but I want to give everybody here a chance. Again, David, I think the question is exactly the right question. We're going to see Rav Chaim in a moment develops the question that you are precisely asking. But before we go through that, you know, again, you could always just look to Rav Chaim to give you the answer. But the process of Limud HaTorah is the grappling, is the struggling, is the trying to come up with the principles ourselves, rather than just have it spoon-fed from our Gedolei Torah. So that's why, again, I have read this Rav Chaim before, so I know what he's going to say. But in case anybody here has not, it's a rich opportunity to try to consider what the answer will be before he tells us. Yeah,
I have a different approach. Chalitza, the process that led to Chalitza happened way before. So this is part of the process. But Kiddushin, particularly, is a new process, and therefore...
Okay, I like what you're saying a lot, and I don't know if that's necessarily what's operative. That's a major theme in both Yibum, and we're probably not going to get to this tonight, but that hold on to what you're saying, because it's important for the discussion of Yiyud that comes next in Rav Chaim. But I'm not sure that's the most basic distinction between Chalitza and Kiddushin that we could draw here. Of course, it builds on what Rav Chaim just said a moment before. What did Rav Chaim say? What's the difference between Chalitza and Kiddushin in terms of their fundamental categories, in terms of how they operate, in terms of halacha?
The act causes it in one case, and the other case, it's not the act that causes it, it's the...
So which one is which? In the context of Kiddushin...
Is the act itself.
Kiddushin is the act? What Rav Chaim just told us, correct, Joel, right? What Rav Chaim just told us is that when it comes to Chalitza, it is the physical act itself. The shoe, the spit, etc. The physical act itself is what creates the halachic result. By Kiddushin, the physical act of placing the ring on a woman's finger is meaningless intrinsically. It's meaningless. It's only meaningful if it is imbued with da'as. When it comes to Kiddushin, Beis Din can't provide da'as to the katan because da'as is at the center of what Kiddushin is, right? Kiddushin is nothing without da'as. Da'as is the critical engine or motivator. It's the mover of the halachic result of Kiddushin. When it comes to Chalitza, all the katan really needs to do is how to properly go through the procedure, how to properly follow the steps. Can Beis Din give him instructions on that? Yeah, Beis Din can give him instructions on that. So Rav Chaim says one difference is going to be Edim, another difference is going to be assisting a Katan. When it comes to an area where, again, the primary motivator of the Chalos, if you will, the primary creation of the halachic result is Da'as, then the actors have to possess their own Da'as and nobody else can export it for them or provide it for them. In a context where the critical piece is not Da'as, intent, machashava, but is rather just the physical activity, all they really need to know how to do is go through the basic procedure.
That's if
they,
why Barton can acquire an escrow, but he can't
I don't want to get into the question of a katan no, with kinyanim right now.
But das machne, it's a different kind of...
So again, yes, das kinyan, kona and das machne are two different things. A katan's ability to make kinyanim is subject to a major machlokas between Rashi and Tosvos, and then the Shach has a third view as to how a katan has kinyanim. And you are also, it is also true, David, that even if katan can be kona, you may not be able to be makna. It's also true, and I think you may have been deliberately or subconsciously touching on this as well, there may be differences between a case, according to the Ravid, between a case where there's da'as makna and there's no da'as makna. In other words, a katan, this is somewhat counterintuitive, but a katan may be able to acquire something from me, but not be able to acquire something from hefker. Because when I'm giving it to him, I have das machne. In other words, I am creating the change in ownership because I'm almost pushing it into his rishus. But a katan may not be able to acquire something from hefker because when it comes to hefker, there's no seller who's pushing something. So kinyane katan is like a very rich sugya in its own right. And again, and you're right. That is why we are machmir, not to when it comes to the lulav and esrogan sukkis. You make sure that you're yotze first before you give it to a katan because they can't necessarily be machne back, particularly on the first day. But again, that's a whole world unto itself. Yeah.
Is there a concept of chalitza shelo lishma?
Is there a concept of chalitza shelo lishma? So again, you do have this case where Rav Chaim does acknowledge that if she does chalitza and she thinks it's yibum, that still undermines it. That does still undermine it. So in other words, Rav Chaim would acknowledge that some basic, what he calls kavana versus das. That, going back to your question, David, right? What does das mean? So when it comes to Kiddushin, Da'as means Da'as, capital Dalet Ayin Saf, right? It's you need real intent to make the Kiddushin. When it comes to Chalitza, you just need Kavana. It's a lower level. You need some basic awareness, let's say, of what's happening, but it's not really the motivator or the driver of what's going on. Yeah?
When the Ketana gets married and the father has to give over the Ketana, does that have anything to do with Da'as?
Presumably in that instance, the father, and again, we may even get into this maybe next week. Again, if we do, we're probably not we'll see how far we get tonight. I'm starting to try to be more realistic. But if you look at the bottom of this column, we'll touch on some of those issues. In those instances, it really presumably is the father who's providing the da'as on behalf of his daughter. She's considered under his jurisdiction, and he has the ability to accept kiddushin on her behalf. So it's really the father's da'as rather than hers. And Rav Chaim explicates that more in the context of yiyud. But again, or yeyud, if you want to be technical. But again, we'll leave that off for possibly a future week. Okay, but that's going to be Rav Chaim's answer. So let's just go back to the text itself. We are now five lines. Let's go five lines down in the second column. Second word. Mitzarchian. Oh, you're missing the top line. I apologize. Four lines down, second word. Four lines down, second word. Vitzarech Ion. And Rav Chaim says this requires further explanation. Why is it that a gadol, the Beis Din, instructing them what to do, works for chalitza, but it doesn't work for gerushin v'kiddushin? The Gemara says that if a person, again, it's a nebuch circumstance, and sometimes we have to deal with cases like this, but if somebody is in their right mental capacity when they get married, nebuch, there's an accident, and they're rendered mentally incapacitated, they can't divorce. The woman is stuck. She can't. So she's stuck. What do you mean? Why don't you just have a Beis Din get in there and have a gadol instruct them how to do it? Clearly, that doesn't work. V'chein l'gabe kiddushin, Rav Chaim says, and the same thing applies to kiddushin. You can't have a katan getting married just by having somebody instruct him. The isa b'gitin daf pehe, because we have a gemara in gitin daf pehe that says ba'aminei Rava mirav Nachman. Rava asked the question of Rav Nachman. So again, this is a comparison to. There's a broader context to this gemara. We'll just read the quotation from Rav Chaim. Chutz mikidushe katan mahu miamrinan hashem miulah bar havayahu odoma asi lechal havaya. When it comes to the kiddushin of a katan, do we say that it will work because maybe at some point in the future, or presumably at some point in the future, they will be within the parsha of kiddushin, or do we say not because right now they're not in the parsha of kiddushin? The context is shlichos and shlichos la'akum. There's a broader context to the gemara. But Rav Chaim's diok in the Gemara, which is what's important for us. The Gemara explicates that when he is a katan, he cannot create kiddushin. Again, doesn't matter if there's an adult standing next to him. Doesn't matter if the gadol hadar is standing next to him. Doesn't matter if the gadol hatorah is standing next to him. If he is a katan, he cannot perform a kiddushin. Whether or not there are adults standing next to him is entirely immaterial. So why is it that when it comes to chalitza, it is okay for an adult to be hovering over them and it works? And once again, the second underlined passage, Rav Chaim once again introduces his yesod. V'nireh, it appears to me, mokrach mizeh, it appears clear to me from this. T'chalok din gerushin v'kiddushin midin chalitza ulishma. There is a fundamental difference between gerushin and kiddushin, and on the one hand, and chalitza and lishma on the other. Divi gerushin v'kiddushin tzarich, and again, this is the critical word for him. Da'as bailim al etzem ha-gerushin v'ha-kiddushin. What is the critical piece when it comes to gerushin and kiddushin? The da'as, the intent of the bailim. Umishum de'ikar ha-kiddushin v'gerushin na'ase al yedei ha-bailin. Because when it comes to gerushin and kiddushin, it's not about the physical activity. The ring on the finger is meaningless. It's all about the da'as of the bailin. V'heim ha-osrim, v'heim ha-matirim. Again, the language is almost loaded with theological significance here, right? They are the ones who create the iser. They are the ones who create the heter. The Torah invests the power to create halachic reality in the hands of people, in the hands of individuals. Again, if we wanted to extract the theological significance of this, it's actually quite inspiring in some ways, right? The Torah is saying that we have power over the halachic world, we have personal autonomy over matters of Isur and Heter. Yalkein tzarech da'atam, and because of that, of course, you're going to need their intent. And when it's all about their das, you can't have somebody teach it to them. Again, that their das is the critical piece. If they lack it, you can't have somebody externally or artificially provide it for them. Because they themselves don't have that das. But as opposed to, in contrast to chalitza and lashma, ein bohem din da'as ba'alim. By there, it's not about the da'as of the ba'alim, irak kavanahu de be'inon. Again, David, here's the critical language, going back to what you were saying. What is da'as? There, you only need kavana. You need some basic awareness of what's going on. Al etza maisa ha'chalitza, on the activity. That patur mimela ba midivrei Torah. And the patur comes automatically through the activity itself. You do need basic awareness. Now, you could have said, if you really wanted to take the Chaim's alternate paradigm to the extreme, you could have said even kavana isn't necessary. Even just the physical activity is fine. Maybe even if you'd pull the wool over her eyes and tell her this is the way to do yibum, and you go through the process of chalitza, maybe that would work too, if it's really just the physical activity. Chaim is not willing to go that far. He says, kavana you need. Some basic awareness of what's going on you need, but you don't need da'as, and therefore, somebody else who's standing over them would be able to provide that basic level of awareness and instruction that they would need to undergo a chalitza. Okay? So before we go further, and Rav Chaim will again further flesh this out in the remainder of the paragraph, but before we go further, let's just recap for a moment. Rav Chaim is saying, again, there are these two types of halakhic activities, some which are fueled by da'as and intent of the actors, of the parties, others which are almost automatic results of physical phenomena. And so far, he's given us two nafka mina between the two. One, the role of Edim. In the former case, where it's about Das, the Edim can sometimes be Lekiyume Milsa. They are necessary in order to make the halachic result by Kiddushin and by Gerushin. Whereas, when it comes to the second category, where it's just the physical activity, the only role of Edim is to clarify and prove that something happened. That's Nafkamina number one. Nafkamina number two is Katan V'Gadol Omed Al Gabav. If you have a child and somebody instructing them, then it won't work if it's all about da'as, like by Kiddushin, because they lack that fundamental qualification. If it's really just about knowing how the procedure works and having a basic awareness, then it will work. Those are the two nafkaminas that Rav Chaim gives us. Now, before we finish the paragraph, I'll give you two other potential nafkaminas of this. I'll just present to you the line in the Gemara, and we'll try to unpack it together. There's a Gemara in Ksubis that is trying to consider the scope of shlichus. Shlichus is a concept that we have in halacha. It's introduced in the second paragraph of Maseches Kiddushin, whereby there are some cases, and as we'll see in a moment, not all cases, there are some cases when I can designate someone as my agent to perform a halachic activity on my behalf. So the Gemara is wondering, where can I use shlichus and where can I not? That's the question that the Gemara poses. And the Gemara offers a principle. Kol sheyeshno b'tnai, yeshno b'shlichus, kol she'eino b'tnai, eino b'shlichus. We have another principle in halacha called tnai. There are certain cases where I can introduce a condition. I can tether a certain halachic activity to a potential condition, right?
Is there a silver in here?
I'm sorry?
A silver?
Yes, yes.
Tell her we're running a little slower than I thought.
That seems to be a theme in this year. Okay.
No, I thought.
Another 7 minutes. So if you have a tanai, what is a tanai? A tanai is where you institute a condition. I'll sell this to you on condition that you're very nice to me and you invite me over for a Shabbos meal. You know, harayat mekudeshasli. The Gemara talks about cases where I'm proposing this marriage, almanas. He tells to her, it's only going to work if I'm a tzadik gamor. It's a case that's mentioned in the Mishnah. Where he makes all other sorts of conditions, you know, on condition that your father pays me $1,000, whatever the case may be, right? They make all sorts of conditions. So, and that's also an important principle in halacha, one that's discussed in the third parak of Maseches Kiddushin, the whole notion of Mishpatei Hatnayim. There are all sorts of rules for how one makes stipulations in halacha and the like. So the Gemara ties the two together. The Gemara says, when can you use shlichus? In instances where you can make a tanai, where you can make a condition. And you can't use shlichus, you can't use an agent, in cases where you cannot make a condition. What's the connection between those two? Why should they be connected? How does it relate to our analysis in the Rav Chaim? What would you say? It is a step removed. Literally a step removed, right?
If you're already doing that, then have Shalif do it for you.
If you're already doing what?
Making a conditional.
It doesn't say that you have to make a conditional in order to use a shliach. If you can make a condition, you can make a shaliach. Right.
So
why?
Not,
Otherwise, it's just a fact.
Exactly. In other words, what I think the Gemara is highlighting, again, Rav Chaim doesn't mention this Gemara. What I think what the Gemara is highlighting is, in order to have a shliach, in order to make a t'nai, you need to fit into what we've been calling category one of halachic activity rather than category two. In other words, in order for that to work, it must be contingent on your da'as rather than just the physical activity. If it's contingent on, again, if you have any halachic act that's contingent on a pure physical metzias, on a pure physical reality, could you ever designate that to someone else? Of course it would be impossible, right? Let me just give a very basic example, what we call davar shebegufo. It's a famous exception to shlichus. You know, I instead of putting on tefillin, I want somebody else to put tefillin on for me. Not to put tefillin on my arm. Somebody else to put on tefillin and I'll be yotze. Can we do that? No, that's called davar shebegufo. Why not is a whole discussion. But it doesn't work, right? Presumably that's because tefillin is a mitzvah. It's not about my das. It's not about my intent. It's about the tefillin being on my arm. It's a physical reality. And if that reality is there, I've done the mitzvah. If that reality is not there, it doesn't matter how many people I appoint to put on tefillin and how much they think about me while they're putting on tefillin, I haven't been yotzei the mitzvah. By a similar vein, I can't make a t'nai on tefillin. I'm only going to be yotzei this mitzvah if it rains tomorrow. That's not how it works. You're yotzei the mitzvah. Now, again, you can't say, I have kavana not to be yotzei the mitzvah. Maybe that works if you have kavana not to be yotzei the mitzvah. But to tether it to a t'nai, I'm only going to be yotzei this mitzvah of tefillin if I'm a millionaire. It doesn't work. It's a mitzios. If it's on your arm.
It's about the ma'isa more than the totsa.
It's about the ma'isa, exactly.
Versus totsa.
I wouldn't distinguish between ma'isa and totsa. I'd distinguish between ma'isa versus das. It's ma'isa versus das. In other words, das.
Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the tefillin to be put on. He wants me to wear the tefillin.
No, he does want you to put
the
tefillin.
No, he wants me to wear the
tefillin. But, right. But David, you could easily reformulate that to say he wants the tefillin to be placed on your arm.
Right.
I wouldn't have...
That's okay. It can't be placed on my arm.
But, when you
but you can't, but, it, but if somebody else puts it on their arm, then that would not be sufficient.
Else's arm, for me, they can't.
Correct, but I think you could formulate that within Maisa or Totsaha. You haven't done the mice of putting on tefillin, true, but you also don't have the totsah of the tefillin being on your arm. So I wouldn't invoke mice versus totsah here. I would sooner invoke mice versus das. In other words, the das doesn't matter, it's just a physical mitzius, right? Contrast that with something like kiddushin, where it is my das, right? It is contingent on my das. So there are very many mishnayos and mesechas kiddushin that say, when I marry a woman, I can tether it to a t'nai, to a condition. I can also appoint a shliach to do it. It's not very romantic. I don't recommend doing it. But in theory, you could appoint an agent to stand for you under the chuppah and do the kiddushin for you. Because in both of those cases, because it's contingent on your da'as, you can separate the physical activity from the halachic result. Even though it's not me standing there in the flesh, the halachic result can work. I can outsource it. Even though the physical activity is done, it might be subject to outside provisions or conditions because it's all contingent on my da'as. Now again, we're not gonna finish the paragraph tonight, but I'll just close with this. So that's in the end, that's four nafkaminas. Eidus l'kiyam adavar, number one, katan v'gadol omed al gabav, number two, shlichus, number three, having an agent do it for you, and number four, t'nai, condition. Now, an interesting question that comes up in Tosfos is the following. Now again, we're not learning Maseches Kiddushin now. For those who are learning the daf are learning Maseches Kiddushin, but what Tosfos raised the question as to whether or not it is possible for there to be a t'nai on kiddushei bia. When it comes to kiddushei kesef, you could certainly make a t'nai. Can you make a t'nai on kiddushei bia? Now, the intuitive assumption of Tosfos is no, that would be a very bad thing. But part of the logic that Tosfos bring is you certainly can't have a shliach for kiddushei bia, right? That doesn't work, right? So it needs to be done in person, right? What that might reflect is that even within kiddushin, and again, those who were there for my introduction to Maseches Kiddushin just a little over a week ago, that even within kiddushin, there may be different avenues for creating a kiddushin. Kiddushin with a ring might be one form of creating a kiddushin that's contingent on da'as. Kiddushei bia might be almost a mitzius of starting to act as husband and wife. And because they start to act as husband and wife, mimela, automatically, the kiddushin or the marriage takes halachic effect. Now, again, I'll just take this one step further. If this were the case, according to Rav Chaim's logic, what else would you not need during Kiddush Bia? You wouldn't need Edim. Do you need Edim for Kiddush Bia?
Yes.
So we have a principle called Hein Hein Ede Yichud, Hein Hein Ede Bia, that the witnesses on the Yichud are tantamount to the witnesses on the Bia. But does that mean they're really tantamount to the witnesses on the Bia? Or we're saying that Kiddush Bia has a lower standard of Edus than the other forms of Kiddushin? Why would Kiddush Bia have a lower standard of Edus than the other forms of Kiddushin? Precisely because it's not contingent on Da'as as much as everything else. It's contingent on the Metzius, that the pure physical act of beginning married life or acting as a married couple. So you see how, again, these ideas, even within something like Kiddushin, can have different streams depending on which method you take and which halachic paradigm it operates under. So in the end, again, maybe we'll spend one more week on this Rav Chaim. But in the end, we have these, again, two very broad paradigms for halachic life, how halachic activity works, da'as or just physical activity, with those four nafkaminas. And Rav Chaim uses this to explain the difference between gerushin and kiddushin on the one hand, and chalitza v'yibum on the other. Shkoyach, Evra.